What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen. 411 Teen is a weekly program for teens and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Leading Child Advocate provides candid dialogue on child abuse, addiction, suicide, and offers young folks tools to cope and find themselves. The Teenage and Young Adult Survivor Handbook, included in the four young adult novels written by Steve Simpson, is a small guide covering most of the topics plaguing young people today. Suicide, bullying, abuse, self-worth, being the child of an addict, living in a dysfunctional home, surviving school, and more. Steve wrote the novels from his personal experience growing up with these issues. He joins 411 Teen on the phone. Welcome to 411 Teen, Steve.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you. You know, as we look at teens and young adults and relationships, we note that the relationship between parents and teens often seems to be an endless struggle with no resolve. And I wanted to have you comment on that, please.
Well, sure. Well, again, and there's always the why.
Okay? Yes,
and
yes.
Most educators would say this, or social workers. You know, someone saying there's a disconnect. I know this is a generalization, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
It was a rare case. But in my experience, I've run a young adult group over 30 years, my own life background, which we'll discuss in a second. If there is a disconnect, there's a why. And usually mm-hmm. the why is some dysfunction at home, whether it's alcoholism would probably be your best bet,
mm-hmm.
drug abuse within the parents. And that's definitely going to cause more than a disconnect, but that would be one of your reasons. Also, self-involvement, you know, parents, if they're divorced, who's dating somebody new, you know,
mm-hmm.
Doesn't love the child. So, again, there's always a why, and the why starts within a household, where there would be a disconnect. Because a disconnect also could be a child also surviving. I mean, they want nothing to do with us.
Right.
But usually the next sentence is a denial. Well, you think it might be because your spouse or your boyfriend or girlfriend is an alcoholic or a drug addict, or you know, but that part's never said, unfortunately.
That's
you
true.
And I'll give you a little back on myself. Now, you heard of an A student, right? You know what an A student is?
Yes. And I noticed you talked about the Z student, and yeah, you got you were ahead of me. I was going to ask you about that. A student, Z student. Share
well,
that with
us. I was a Z student growing up, and I love about myself in classrooms. I know some teachers listen to this, okay? Always acting up, always interrupting the class. Matter of fact, teachers would want to give up the tenure just not to have me in the classroom. Okay. And what happened was, and as far as tests, if the teacher said no one can fail the test, every head would look at me. In fact, my lowest grade
mm-hmm.
was a negative 20.
I saw that. How did you do that?
How can you get negative 20?
Right.
Very simple. What I used to do, this is important as we're talking now. See, during the test, I'd pick on all the smart kids, try to distract them. Because in my head, if you were smart, you had a perfect life. I interpreted it as that.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents were great. Everything's nice in your household. And I did not have that. I abused my household, which, again, we'll discuss. So what happens is I would do anything to distract these kids. Move their hands, throw ink onto them, paper, you name it, to get them.
Oh,
we're talking second, third grade, you know. So finally, one kid, I tried everything. He would not. He just had the concentration of iron. So I just pushed him off his seat. And I got frustrated. And the teacher said, you, get back in your seat. Whenever you get, I'm taking off 20 points. And I responded, I'm not going to even try. So instead of a zero, she wrote negative 20. Now, I would probably try to figure out how to cheat more time than most kids would study. I'd spend longer time. And my friends would say, why don't you just study? It would take half the time. And I would say, what's the use? Because I believed
mm-hmm.
that even if I studied, I would fail, because I thought I was a failure. Now, why? Of course, I had a father that was a very abusive alcoholic parent. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Both physically and verbally abusive. Now, the physical stuff I'll mention, you didn't know why. He had like a snap temper. He'd be
okay.
talking to you like I'm talking to you right now.
Mm-hmm.
And out of nowhere, hit you, throw things at you, push you off your chair. So, and so again, so I definitely had the physical abuse. But I have to say, the verbal abuse did far worse damages. Those scars did not heal, okay? Bruises and things got over. And the scars were healing since I can remember as a child. I'm not going to mention some of the words on your show, but horrible things. But more, worse, even more than the four-letter words was failure.
Stupid. Right.
You know what?
They attacked your essence. Excuse me for the interruption. Sure. But I was going to say that verbal abuse attacked your very essence, your whole self-concept. And so I would think if you had this concept that you were unworthy and you were stupid and all these other things, that's something that stuck with you because you heard it continually.
Exactly. Let's face it. When you watch these war movies and soldiers get captured, they're brainwashed, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's your parent doing it to a child.
Right.
You honestly think that you're all these horrible things. And I was always adversarial towards adults in those younger grades because I would think I'll get them before they get me. Because what was my opinion of an adult? I used my parents as a model, my father, and unfortunately it wasn't a very positive thing. Now, I was suicidal from the time I was 11 years old on. And I want to stress something, and I mention this in the books as well, I didn't want to die, but I didn't want to live. Now, you might say when I speak to the classes and schools and high schools and colleges, they first go, well, that's the same thing. No, it's not.
Mm-mm.
I didn't like being dead. I was never dead before. Okay. And at 11 years old, I didn't have a big religious concept of death, but I knew what it was like being alive. Pain, constant drama, and I honestly thought it was never going to get better. And this is key. I might have thought I was stupid, but I wasn't. If I honestly knew it was going to get better, which it did, okay, I went to try suicide. But I honestly said, you know, 11 years, it's enough.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not doing another 11 years of this. Now, eventually, fortunately for me, I did it by the time I was 13, ended up in foster care. I was in two foster homes, one of the best things that ever happened to me. Now, eventually, my mom got her own place, God bless her, and moved in with her. And that is the ultimate goal, by the way, of foster care. But that time period in foster home was so imperative. And simultaneously, Liz, I got involved with self-help groups, kind of like I run right now, the same type. And what happened was the one thing I gave myself credit for, the only thing I gave myself credit for all those years was creative writing. Even as a little boy, I was writing little stories and poems.
Mm.
In fact, I'll tell you a little analogy you would like. I used to cut school from like third grade on, and I got away with it more then because no one dreamed this third grade is cutting school. I was sick. Yeah, they bought everything I gave them.
Mm-hmm.
But where would I go? And this is critical. Did I go in a parking lot? Did I go in the mall? No. I went to the library where I lived and literally would read books, or I'd ask, same sentence, I'd go up to the library and say, can I have a paper and pen? And then they'd smile and give me the paper. What was I doing? I was writing stories, again, poems, proses. I didn't know they were called proses back then, but I was writing proses, okay? And here's the analogy of a kid with low self-esteem. He's cutting school because he thinks he's stupid and a failure at school at third grade, but he's going to the library to
write
poems and stories that most kids older than him couldn't do, and that's the analogy of a kid with low self-esteem. Now, what happened was, for these meetings I went to, these self-help groups, I used to plan things for them. That was my job. And the girls would say, most of them were dominantly female, and they would say, wow, I can never write like this. But why do you do bad in school? And I go, well, because I'm stupid. And they said, Steve, you can't write like this and be stupid. Why do you say you're stupid? And, of course, my father said all these years, they'd laugh. This is teenager. Why are you listening to someone that's drunk all the time?
Right.
I laugh at it now.
Right.
But to then it was like, oh. And so this wasn't overnight. They had to teach me how to study. Steve, you open the book, you read the chapter. You know. And by the way, while you're in class, instead of interrupting the class, listen to the teacher. You'll pass by accident, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I started, now, fortunately for me, too, I moved to different schools. I didn't have my school records, so they know who I was. And what happens is I start passing, then mostly passing, than doing better than passing. It became almost like a game to me, almost like playing numbers. How many more answers right till I get to 80? How about 85? Ended up in the honor roll by the next year, National Junior Honor Society. I joined sports just to keep myself busy after school. Got the equivalent to the MVP for my track team, joined wrestling. But here's the best part. They make me student of the month. Okay? Hang my picture up as a student, a model student. Be like a 2 years before that same picture would have been a dartboard in the teacher's faculty. Okay. And now, all of a sudden, be like him. And here is the sad thing, but also happy thing. I could have done that any time in my life. These, quote, smart kids that I was picking on, I was one of them. Just didn't know it. So I always say, for those who are listening to this, and I say this in schools, the only difference between a smart kid and a dumb kid, and I've been both. I've been the kid that got the lowest grade. I got the kid that had 100 average. And the smart kid believes he's smart. Mm-hmm. And I would, if you read my mind during both time periods, if you read my mind in the early years of school, I hope we can just pass this thing. I'm getting in trouble. This is dumb. I hate this. Oh, forget it. I'm not even trying anymore. If you read my mind, oh, this is easy. If it, no, I'll skip that answer and come back to it. Just the confidence. Same kid. And I've been both. Mm-hmm. And it really is that simple. Yes, sometimes you need tutoring. You need coaching. You need after school.
Right.
There's a topic you have to brush up on. Okay? But any kid can do that. Running my group over the years, I can't tell when he gets geniuses I run across, okay, and they the school. Now, another very important factor is this. I mentioned smart kids when I was younger thinking they had perfect lives. Well, when I first joined this group, and I'm 13 years old, so in walks this girl. Now, this girl was the polar opposite of me. I used to call her the queen and bow down to her in the hallway, okay? Because she was hall monitor, she was this president, that, whatever she was, whatever title there was, she was going to run for it and get it. Top grades, okay? I couldn't stand her. Okay, so the point is, though, she tried suicide more times than I thought about it, okay? And I remember saying, what are you doing here? And she smiled and said, oh, I'm fine, Steve. How are you? And then she said, you'll figure it out. And it was an eye-opener for me because this was also critical. I noticed that the, quote, smart kids in the group, their parents called them the same exact name as my father did. Now, I questioned that and said, well, wait a minute. I don't get this. You're smart. Why would he call you stupid? Why would he call you that? Me, I can see. That was the point. Steve, and this is a revelation for me. If somebody else was your father's son, or if he had a daughter instead of you, he would have said the same exact thing to them. It wasn't me. It was him. And that's why I stress it's the alcoholic or the drug addict or the abuser.
Right.
They're abusing because they're an abuser. They're calling you these names because they're an alcoholic.
That's what they are.
Exactly. And that's so imperative for young people to hear and to get across to young people. And that one line that I use really over the years really clicks. You see them nod their heads that if someone else was their child, they would do the same thing. And it's got nothing to do with your grades. Smart, dumb, this, that, and you're not dumb. And that's important, too.
I'm talking with Steve Simpson, an advocate for at-risk children. Simpson has taken his own experience as a victim of child abuse and devoted his career to exposing abuse, advocating on the behalf of survivors, and disseminating abuse prevention strategies for children, parents, and communities. He talks with 411 Teen following our break. Steve Simpson has run a youth adult group called Together We Can Make It, sharing his experiences and giving support to his members. His four books, Who Am I?, Runaway, The World Is Wrong, and A Child's Island, all include the Teenage Young Adult Survivor Handbook. Steve, I had to interrupt you. Would you like to continue or you were sharing your experiences?
Sure, love to. Yeah, two things. One thing on child abuse, I like to just say this also, that, you know, there are reasons why many victims will not report it. Now, in my case, I always thought that I was my fault, whether I was a bad student or I did things in the house or broke things. And I always stress to young people, even if you did something that would get any parent upset, if it turns to them abusing you, no. You had nothing to do with that. An abuser abuses a child because they're an abuser. Now, there's another reason, which is interesting, why young people will hold off on reporting child abuse. And they don't talk about this as much. And that's what they think. Usually in most households, not all, but in most households, you have the abuser, and then you have the codependent non-abuser. And they're afraid they're going to get the codependent non-abuser in trouble. Let's just say the dad is the alcoholic and the mom is not. So they want to report the father because they're afraid they're going to get the mom in trouble. Or in some cases, it's not even the dad. It could be a stepdad or a mom's living boyfriend. What I stress them is you're not going to get your mom in trouble. She'll probably get help, counseling or whatever it is, which would benefit her. So that's one of the big things I get across to young people or suggest that other people do, and that's one of the reasons why they don't report their abuse.
In your opinion, as you look at this picture, do you think parenting is more difficult today than it was 30 years ago?
Well, it certainly has a lot more obstacles or things they have to deal with. We all know about the Internet, which can be a very positive thing or a very negative thing. You didn't have that back then, you know. Back then, your kids played in front of your house.
Right.
You looked at them, you know, back in the old day. Today, it's a different world. You didn't have things on TV that you would have today. You kind of have to scan that and monitor that. So there are a lot of other things that parents do have to look after today. And in fact, one suggestion I'm also going to make, a phenomenon has also happened in, quote, functional homes. Now, I'm not talking about alcoholic homes or abusive homes. You know, with the economic crisis that we had over the years, parents have the tendency now to talk about their economic problems to or in front of their children. And that's a bad thing. You know, they're not your peers. You know, you want to talk to your adult relatives or your adult friends when they can't hear you and talk about, that's fine. But when you say to a young person or in front of them, I hope I don't lose my overtime because then we're going to lose the house.
Right.
That's a devastating thing for a young person to have. And a lot of people nod their heads and say, oh, I think I've done that. And now you wonder why their grades start plummeting down or they can't sleep at night. Hey, listen, you're the adult, you're the parent. You lose sleep. You worry about the economics. Their concern is supposed to be the school grades and developing and so on. Now, there's nothing wrong in saying, by the way, things are a little tight. We have to tighten our belts a little bit. That's fine. That's part of life lessons. But when you say hopeless things to kids about being homeless or losing the job and so on, that is devastating to a young person. That shouldn't be said to them. You can also trigger something in them that that child happened to have other issues you didn't know about it. Maybe depression. Maybe they had suicidal tendencies. You can really trigger that when you start saying things like that. So one suggestion we give to families is just guard yourself. Be careful what you're saying to your children or in front of them. Remember, again, they're not your peers. You don't use them as a therapist. You know, they're very mature today in their age, but they're still your children.
Right.
And I think that's a critical point to get across. Now, on suicide, I also want to say this to anybody listening to this, adult or child. I have known many people over the years who were suicidal, and myself in the same category, but many from my volunteer work and just knowing people. And there's one thing that they all had in common, how different they were from each other. Personality is different. Situation is different. But there is one common denominator out of all those that were suicidal, whether A, thought about it but didn't try it, or tried it but, thank God, lived. Okay? 100%. I don't mean 99. I don't mean 98. 100% were glad they never committed suicide. And what is the answer? Because things got better. And I think anyone listening to this, or if they can relate this to someone, is no matter how hopeless something looks, I can't see how it's going to get better. I used to say that myself. It got better. So, again, I stress to people. Now, you might have to take an action. I always say take a deep breath, say a prayer. If you're in school, go to your school social worker, your school counselor, the dean. They might know a lot more than you think they do. There's community centers that have things. Even churches. That could be a church you belong to. But churches are wonderful resources for outreach programs, 12-step groups, self-help groups. There's the suicide helpline, which is 1-800-273-TALK, 1-800-273-TALK, and, of course, the National Runaway Switchboard, which is 1-800-RUNAWAY, 1-800-RUNAWAY, because a lot of people run away are also suicidal. I relate because I've been both there, both places. So my point to anyone listening is that things do get better, and they get better a lot faster than you think they will. You just have to take that first step, whether it's calling an 800 number or speaking to a school counselor, you know, going to some church and trying to speak to the pastor there, whatever it is. But, again, I can't stress that enough, you know, and get out of the house. Don't be alone if you're suicidal, if you have to walk around the shopping mall, if you have to go into a movie theater by yourself. Be with people. Needless to say, be with positive people. If you're going to be with people that are abusing drugs or alcohol,
that's not what you want. Well, Steve, you were severely abused, wanted to die, but you didn't. Can you share some coping strategies that you found very helpful? I think coping for you obviously was your writing, going to the library, keeping yourself busy, being removed from the situation. But if you would share some of those strategies that someone listening may be in similar situation, or even a parent that is listening may hear and think of some of the strategies that may indeed be beneficial and life-changing.
Absolutely. Well, one thing is that you're not alone. You see, when I would go, I thought the only person that had that problem, okay, I used to say, you don't understand. I used to say it so fast, it was like one word, don't understand. That was my, you know, but people do understand. And I think that's the first thing that anyone listening to this or someone to help a young person is to let them know that there are so millions in your category. That's number one. Again, I can't stress enough to be involved with some type of, there's so many groups out there, again, 12-step programs, self-help groups, therapy groups that you can join, and then here's the whole room full of individuals with your same problem. That was critical to me, to mm-hmm. see that, and laugh together, cry together. That is so important. And if they are in school, a lot of the school social workers, alcoholism counselors in the school have groups. Okay, mm-hmm. that meet secretly during a period, for example, they'll meet too. So that is critical. That don't do this on your own. Or if you're a parent, one of the things I've heard parents over the years, which is a mistake. I know my husband was abusive. We divorced. But we divorced. My son was 12. My daughter was 8. So I got my son therapy, but my daughter was only 8. I didn't get her therapy. Yeah, she was too young. What a horrible mistake that is. That little 8-year-old, even if they're 5-year-old. They see and heard more than you thought they did. Patterns are developed inside of them. Let's say they're even doing well in school, but if you don't get them therapy or self-help or some or combination of both, okay, what's going to happen is when she gets older and she's in all these horrible, abusive relationships and you're scratching your head saying, I don't know why, well, the why is because you never got her therapy when she was younger. So you don't just get the help for the child that's acting out. You know, mm-hmm. with the child that's not acting out, you don't get them help, and I've seen that. Everybody needs help. Everyone needs camaraderie, however long or short it is. And again, whether it's one-on-one with a social worker or a self-help group, the combination is a nice thing for them. You have a professional speaking to them as well as their own peers. Okay, so that's an important coping mechanism for myself that I've done. To surround myself always with the positive people, always with people. That's just so important. Once the isolation starts, that's dangerous. Okay, I know that from my own self growing up over the years, if I was alone, all those thoughts come through. So if there's a young person out there you want to help, the worst thing you can do is leave them alone in the bedroom. Okay?
Okay.
It's just a bad thing. I'm not even saying they're going to kill themselves right in the bedroom, which who knows, they might, but even they don't. But the more time alone, the more in their heads they feel that they're a loner. Okay, and they're unique and they have these problems, they're by themselves. So it's very important to have that individual connected with other people.
If you suspect, if you're an adult, and you suspect a young person is living in a real hell, be it abuse, bullying, poor parenting, whatever, what do you recommend they do? How do they approach that person that they have the suspicions about? How are there things that they can do to establish the trust and really display a genuine concern? Because that's part of, you know, the young person is feeling guilty and they are very suspicious of those around them. So,
and you don't blame them. Well,
right,
here's the whole
right.
thing. There's a few angles to that question. If it's actual physical abuse, they might want to report it. You know, I always laugh.
Yeah.
If someone puts the garbage out on the wrong night on the block, they'll call 911. It's amazing. Or they park in the wrong, they parked in front of my house. Child abuse, I don't want to get involved. I don't want to get involved. You don't want to get
right.
involved.
Right.
So I always say, first thing you should, that's the phone call you should be making, okay, if there's abuse. That's number one. Now, if it's a different type, if it's verbal, you're a relative, you're an aunt, you're an uncle, neighbor, yeah, you do want to spend, like you said, build a relationship, build trust. That's an important factor, okay? It's just so important, even if you don't want to bring the topic up, compliments to the young person, okay, is important. You know, even I tell peers in school, you have a group of kids, and you're making a joke about to every kid that in your clique that comes in, okay? You tease them, they all laugh. You get to that one individual that he or she, instead of laughing like everybody else, they throw a fit, they get angry, and you say, what's your problem? Everyone else thought this was funny but you. What you may not realize is that young person might get verbally abused at home. And by the time they come to school, they're raw. They've had it already. So your little joke is just, in their head, another validation, unfortunately, that there is something wrong with them and they're a horrible person. So I say, and you may think you know about their household, but you'd be surprised how many can camouflage it well.
Right.
So what I would say to you is, if you have someone like that, even as an adult, let alone a young person, okay, I know this person's sensitive, twist it around. Give them compliments instead, okay? And watch, you might be the only one who's giving that person compliments. Now, one thing I will say, you mentioned the handbook, the Teenage and Young Adult Survival Handbook that I wrote, which touches on all these. Now, It's inside, like you said, my novels. And the reason why I did that is this. If any teacher walked in front of a classroom in America and said, or any country for that matter, and said, listen, I have a book on child abuse. Who here is being abused? Who here is parents an alcoholic? Who's suicidal?
Right.
No one's raising their hand. Meanwhile, at a very class of 30, a half dozen should raise their hand. And I never would have in my million years I wanted to raise my hand. So what do you do? The fact that the handbook that deals is inside of a fiction book, it's a book within a book, it camouflages that now a young person can raise their hand. Why? You know, there's four different books, different topics.
Yeah, and your books are just great. I mean, the characters, all that you created, all are dealing with problems that many kids face on a daily basis, yet they're fictional. And I really liked how you connected that to the reader.
Well, thank you. It's funny because it might be a science fiction story. They might be fighting aliens, mm-hmm. or street armies, or hitmen. But one of the characters might be a foster child. One might be a child of an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. So they're really the children. So the child can ask for the book, or you can give the book to a child without them saying, or a teenager, or a young adult saying, why you give me this? You can simply say, I know you like these kind of stories. But you say a prayer while they have it. They go in and read the handbook also.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the characters in the book, as much as they're action-packed, they read like a movie you would see today. But the fact, like you pointed out, because the characters in the books are children of alcoholics, even the fiction characters,
indeed.
It almost leads them up to getting ready to read the handbook, which is
it
the nonfiction
does.
Part.
You know, and abuse happens everywhere. It's in every race. I mean, culture, religion, you know, socioeconomic status. But it still remains a big taboo. Nobody wants.
And it's funny you said about the races. Another thing I discovered in the group, which helped me out, is no matter what race the person was, like religion,
mm-hmm.
their abusive parents said the same thing to all of us. I mean, it crossed cultural lines.
Right.
It's funny. I guess the abuse of these alcoholics is probably the most unprejudiced thing there is. You know, but for me, it helped me to say again, see, it isn't me.
Right.
It's that person, because they all act the same. But like you said, the taboo, and it's so important because no one wants to talk about it. But once, I got to tell you something, though. Once that individual, especially any age, but especially a young person, is in a setting where there's other victims and abusers and they hear them, or other children of alcoholics, you have to see the relief. With me, it was.
Mm-hmm.
Smile always been in my face because it was like, I'm not alone.
Right. Like, exactly.
I'm not alone. This mm-hmm. is not a Steve problem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything you think is your own characteristics. Okay? And one of the things I wrote in the handbook is called Friends of a Child Alcoholic. And that's just all the characteristics that you think are you, and it's not you. Now, the positive thing, that means if it's not really me, if this is not me and my personality, it's just the results of me living with this abuse.
Living in this environment, that's right.
I can change it then. I'm not stuck with this the rest of my life. And that was an eye-opener for me. In my case, when I was young, I didn't have to be a, quote, bad student or act up all the time. Other people might be relationships. Some people say, I have the worst luck in relationships. No, it's not luck.
It's not luck. Uh-uh.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you're doing certain things to attract certain people or act certain ways in relationships. But guess what? It can change. And that to me, was an eye-opener. So I think that's just so important.
How do you inspire and educate kids to become their own champions of their destiny, you know, that they really do play a role and that they can redirect themselves?
Well, I think, again, once they get through getting through this, all the things that they were called, almost every young person has some type of talent. And that talent could be, whether it's a music thing or a writing thing, it could be something they're good and great. Maybe they want to help other people and they don't know there's a lot of jobs that can do that. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that once you uncover the self-esteem issues, they almost come to the surface. Look at how many young adult celebrities today have admitted they've had different issues. Demi Lovato was a wonderful example, I think.
Right.
She's inspired many young people
yeah.
by being so honest about her problems, and look how successful she is, okay? I mean, the list goes on. You had Bella Thorne, who has dyslexia, but still became an actress and even danced, which I'm sure people would have said, those are the two worst things you could pick, but was successful in it. So there's a lot of young adult celebrities out there, and not that any of them are perfect, because none of us are perfect.
No.
But I think those type of examples are very important for them to see, wow, through all that, you still made it, you know? Yeah, older actors, Robert Downey Jr., he had his bout with drugs and jail and so on. Mm-hmm. He could have walked around the rest of his life and said, oh, I used to be successful. He did it again and became a successful actor all over again. So I think there's many examples that people can look at. You know, there's a lot of negative things in press, unfortunately, about different celebrities. They're going to be out there. But there's a lot of positive things out there, too. And I tend to like the ones that did have problems, but, wow, came through it, and despite their obstacles.
Despite.
I think it's just important.
That's very important, the key. And, I mean, your milieu, your environment, the folks that you do associate with, like you said, those smart kids, you were one of those. You didn't realize it, but if you're in an environment that is stimulating and that is reaffirming of you, that's going to also aid in your coping and making it through this just difficult time, because it's not going to be here always.
Well, no. And I think what you just hit on the head is, all things must pass.
Mm-hmm.
You always think these problems or the rough times. I used to think whatever I was going through is never going away, you know?
Right.
And that's false. Because if you think of problems we had 5 years ago, they're gone. They had so much control of our lives back then. But then as time goes on, they lose the control. They dissipate. And I just didn't realize that. And also not to fall down when the problems come up. Like I used to give up on everything because one thing happens. Hey, isolate the problem. That's just a problem. But keep going with other things. I think also it's so important to find something. Everybody's good at something.
That's right. That's right.
And focus on that, because that pivots, like my writing pivoted into better grades and so on. All these things will pivot in self-esteem. Listen, I remember, again, unfortunately, my father telling me years ago, well, you haven't been successful in your writing, so why do you keep trying? That's what I was told. If I listen to him, I won't be on the phone with you right now.
Right. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. If you're just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen. I'm talking with Steve Simpson, author and advocate for at-risk children. He has appeared on numerous TV shows, including Montel Williams, Geraldo, NBC News Network. Let's talk a little bit about your books, just where or how one can purchase them. Because we've been talking and the program will be over, but I think that they are something that young folks can really connect with. Those who are going through some changes can connect. So where can one purchase it?
Well, right. And it's an excellent tool for schools also, or school, mm-hmm. libraries. So I would say two ways. Of course, Amazon, that goes without saying today. But also, the easier way is probably to go right on the website. It's Power Publishing Corp. That's C-O-R-P, powerpublishingcorp.com. And they come right up, and they're inexpensive. I made the way purposely so people can just obtain them, the soft cover. You can get all four for less money it would cost you me to walk into a movie theater today.
Okay.
So, again, if they go to www.powerpublishingcorp.com, it has also all sorts of information they might find valuable as well. Another thing I also put in the books is different 800 numbers. I mentioned some on your show, but there's also a glossary of them for different needs for different young people.
Mm-hmm.
They might find different organizations. I give them the websites for those as well. One thing I know is important is, as a writer, not to be arrogant and think that your one book's going to cure everything. No, I think it gives them hope. They're not to give them some suggestions. They're not the only one. But the biggest goal is then to pivot them to getting help, whether it's a school personnel, a social worker, whether it's a counselor outside of school. But that's my important goal of it. To do that, like I've had it. And I think also another suggestion I'm going to divert and give to young people, even mm-hmm. not so young people, is another thing is when you're going through problems is go do some volunteer work somewhere. Now, you might say, huh? I'm depressed.
I don't feel like doing that.
Exactly. But the thing is, you'd be surprised. Those that take me up on it will say, best suggestion you ever gave me. For some reason, my problems don't seem as bad. Because your adrenaline's up, your self-esteem's up, you're helping another, whatever it is, whether it's senior citizens, whether it's children, whether it's just physical work, whether it's a food pantry, helping drop off food to people's houses, you name it, soup kitchens. You know, a lot of these organizations would love to have another pair of hands or a pair of ears. And so I also heavily recommend that to people. In my worst of problems, I double down on my volunteer work. You know, and it's been, like you said, it's been my saving grace over the years.
Let's look in these last few minutes that we have at the impact of culture. I mean, for example, violence is as American as apple pie. It permeates our very existence. It's prevalent in our music, in the media, in the movies. How does it impact the at-risk teen?
Well, for me growing up, and I'm not going to blame the industry, and you can have action movies, and I enjoy them, to be honest with you. However, the problem with me, though, was I thought that was always the solution. If you had an arguing kid in the school, you hit him, you know.
Right.
That's what happened to me in my house, you know. And I think that, unfortunately, becomes somewhat of an impact. And that's male and female, by the way, that happens, too. So I would say that one way is I had to learn that it really isn't the answer. There's better ways to communicate your point. You know, and I mean better ways, because violence only begets violence, and I beat this kid up, and his friend's going to beat me up the next day, you know, so on and so forth, as opposed to I learned, how do I verbally get around this? But I don't mean verbally by insulting them.
Right,
Of course, of how to work it. And you'd be surprised, and it's almost a challenge, but I think that's one of the issues today. And, yet, and there's so much stress and tense. I mean, like, you turn on the news, and it's all out there. But there's so many positive things. You know, you speak to schools and teachers. There's so many students doing so many positive things, too. They don't get the limelight at all.
No.
Unfortunately.
No.
And it's unfortunate, too, because that's also encouraging to young people. And I also say, by the way, speaking of volunteer, if someone is listening, you're still in school, middle school, high school, college, there are so many clubs and volunteer work you can do with organizations and clubs and schools. And that is a fantastic resource. You know, people think of school just learning. And look, when I was at my worst, that last bell rang, don't stand in the doorway because I'd run you right down, okay? But once I got involved in clubs and after-school things, which I never thought I would, wow, what a difference. It gave you something you liked about the place, and again, your time was put to something positive. So whether it's a sport, again, whether it's a club or an organization, whatever it is, a chorus, drama, whatever, I tell young people, get involved in those, because again, it's a way to get your self-esteem up, and you'd be surprised that the grades do go up when you're doing these activities. Because now that building that you go to that school, you start liking things about that building. It's not like a prison to you, you know?
Yeah. You know, alcohol is, we talked about living with the alcoholic parent, and alcohol is a national pastime. We send a message about responsible drinking, but alcohol is involved in 50% of the nation's homicides, suicides, and driving fatalities.
Yeah, a lot of damage. And child abuse. Number one cause of child abuse is alcohol or drug abuse. Number one cause.
Yeah.
Hands down. So, unfortunately, it is behind that. And, you know, and you do have professionals out there trying, you know, to talk about alcoholism. Or you know, again, most schools have an alcoholism counselor. SAD programs, MAD programs. They're more important than ever. Because what you just said, driving fatalities, overdoses, suicides, violence. Okay, how many people never would have gotten violent if they weren't drunk? Never would have happened, you know.
Indeed.
But unfortunately, the damage is done, and both are paying the consequences the next day, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't want to have to get into even raping and date rapes and not all, but many of them are by drug and alcohol induced situations.
Right, they are.
You know, would never have happened. So I would have to say that it really is. And unfortunately, you said it's laughed off, considered a pastime. Everybody drinks. Well, whatever. Not everybody beats their kids. Everyone rapes. And everyone beats someone up, kills someone, gets in the car and kills.
No.
That is not everybody does this.
No,
and that's a wrong concept to have.
Well, another thing about Americans is we seem to solve everything with a pill or a glass of alcohol. And I'm just wondering what influence our attitude about drugs has on adolescent behaviors. I mean, do you think that kids who use drugs may be self-medicating, given the stressors?
They are. Mm-hmm. They're dealing with pain so much, and it is self-medicating. And first of all, most alcoholics and drug addicts are children of alcoholics and drug addicts.
Right.
I mean, you walk into a rehab or an AA meeting, any meeting, and say, everyone raise your hand whose parents are alcoholic. 99% are raising their hands, hands mm-hmm. down, no questions asked. Mm-hmm. Now, that's number one. But number two, you brought an important point out, too. We do as a society sometimes, you see on different movies and so on, TV shows, oh, you're having a rough day, come on, let's get a drink. Oh, what a bad example. I know that everybody's an alcoholic. I'm friends with people with a social drink. I get that. But it's a horrible message to say, the way to deal problems is to drink or take drugs. Bad, bad message. Because if you get that young person who's already on that border, you just confirm to them, you just acknowledge them, this is what you do when you have problems. And it's not what you do when you have problems. You know?
Yeah.
You don't use it to get brave and so on. So I agree with you, too, that imagery is wrong and extremely dangerous. When I see a celebrity, you know, no names, but brag or joke about smoking pot or drinking stuff, it's so devastating. I know school social workers want to cringe when they see those things because they feel all my work is out the window because you had to go joke and think it's okay. It's not okay.
It's not. Yeah, you're right. It's not acceptable. It's not okay. But we, society, continue to present mixed messages. And I think that's where the breakdown is. You know, yet we know that alcohol is not the panacea. It is not the cure-all. It is not the way to cope. What do we demonstrate? What do we say? What do our lives, our daily lives, indicate? So it is a catch-22, to say the least. As we continue looking at issues and dysfunction, about 26% of the nation's children currently live with their biological mother and father. What impact do you think this has on adolescent development? The fact that you are in a broken family or a blended family, you do not have your biological parent. From your experience in your groups, what have you found?
Well, my experience has been that, obviously, and fortunately, it's a fact of life, because like you said, the minority of people stay together. It's ironic. And of course, it is impactful on them because they don't have the both parents. But I'm going to add a little caveat to that. Look, if things don't happen and parents get divorced, well, I get
that. Yeah.
It doesn't make them bad people. However, it's stage two, that in many cases, then the parent gets in a boyfriend-girlfriend, usually living boyfriend-girlfriend, and that person is either abusive to the young person or even verbally abusive to the young person, and that is the ultimate betrayal. This isn't even my dad, and you're letting him do this, you know, because you're codependent and just can't be alone. And don't think the kids don't know that. You know, they know
right.
that. And so that's the part two to that. You know, a marriage not working out, well, should we stay together? I get the answer to that. But what do you do afterward? And I think that becomes the problem. I mean, like, you know, in high school or college, you joked about the person that was coming in high all the time, or you joked about the person that always had to have a boyfriend or girlfriend every month, a different one. Well, unfortunately, those people are parents now. And it's devastating. Here's another scenario that happens, too. You could have a child. Let's say a girl, for example, and her dad was an alcoholic, and she gets called all these names. Then her mom leaves him and gets a boyfriend, but he's an alcoholic, and mom's codependent, and this is who she tends to date. That person calls this girl's name. She breaks up with him, gets a third one. That person calls this girl's names. That individual now, that child, thinks these things must be true about me, because every male figure in my life has called me these things. Unfortunately for her, she's wrong. Every male figure has been another alcoholic partner that your mom picked. But can you imagine the self-esteem damage to that girl? Okay,
no.
Being called names, like I said, that you as an adult you wouldn't want to call someone because you'd be considered horrible. But this teenage girl is being called that and growing up with these names being called. And unfortunately, sometimes they act on these things because their self-esteem is either low or no self-esteem. So that's a scenario that has developed out of the society that you talked about. mom just does, or dad, depends who the person is, does not get help for their codependency. But while they're doing this codependency life, they're taking the kids along for the ride.
Right. Yeah. And depression. Depression is a major mental illness among adults, and it's a problem in teens. Do you think that today's teens are more depressed and anxious than previous generations? Are we just more tuned into it?
Combination of both. We are tuned into it more, but I think, I don't know, I see a lot out there with young people today, and like you said, a lot are just so sad and depressed. The bullying, as we know, goes on and on with the internet. And one of the things I tell parents is that if your child is saying they've been called things, the worst thing you can do is laugh it off. Oh, my God, you just told that. And maybe you think you're doing the right thing. Well, I'm laughing to show them it's not important. What you just told them was their feelings and they are not important. My suggestion, listen to them first, okay? Go, wow, I'm so sorry. Listen to what that's bothering them. I don't care what they were called, whether you think it's a joke or not. That's imperative. Validate their feelings. Then if you want, as time goes on, to say, you know, as we're talking, you know, it's really silly that person even calls you. You know you're not that. But at first, at least validate them. Say, I'm so sorry this was done to you, this hurt you. But again, the mistake the parents make is they blow it off. Oh, stop it. Come on. We all get called.
I know.
Bad, bad thing, because you just told them is you're not important. Your feelings aren't important. And that young person is saying, well, it's important to me. I'm crying over this, obviously. And they may not be letting you on. I'm also thinking of suicide. I'm also thinking of just running away now. I can't handle this anymore. So that's an important thing. And unfortunately, you know, the internet, it is easier for young people to go after someone, because when you're not looking someone in the eye, of course, you can tweet whatever you want, Instagram whatever you want about the person. I said about young adult people, even the celebrities, I look at some of them, I'm like, oh my God, leave this girl alone. Like, my God, they're ripping it. But that happens not to celebrities, that happens to regular people, and again, who are just going to school. But I will stress one more thing, too, and this is important. And this is a generalization again. Why are some young people more targeted for bullying than other ones? And, anyone who's a teacher off the record would say, yeah, I can kind of see which one's going to get bullied. Well, most of the time, not all, most of the time because they're getting bullied at home. I call it the domestic bully. Okay?
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that.
The person at home, they're not only destroying their self-esteem, but they're setting them up that in school they will be bullied again. But no one, again, like you said, that's taboo. We blame the schools. We blame the teachers. We'll blame the computers, which all can maybe take a part in it. But the real deal is, do you think if your husband's calling your son or daughter these horrible names, that might have had something to do with it? Almost
that's
like
right.
suicide. One of the most classic lines I hear, and I cringe when I hear it, is, I don't know why they did it. Stop it. No one wakes up one morning and just makes a snap decision.
They say,
I'm going to kill myself.
Or they just wanted attention.
Worst thing in the world.
Worst.
A lot of other things I could do for attention than that.
Yeah.
Myself speaking personally and others that I've known, it's from years of built up hopelessness. And where's the hopeless coming from? The house itself, okay? And they finally had enough. You know, the interesting thing is, the runaway, the child that runs away or the one that's going to commit suicide, it's the wrong thing to do. Suicide is wrong. But the least, they're the only one in the household that's saying, there is a problem here and I want out. Now they're taking the wrong way out.
Right.
The way
right.
out would be therapy, counseling, authorities, school, social worker, that, you know, 12-step programs. But at least they're not in denial. They're doing it the wrong way. They're handling it the wrong way. Well, you're stuck in your denial. So I always cringe when I don't know why they did it. Why is my child always bullied? Well, let's look at your household. Let's see why they're so vulnerable to being bullied. And I bet you Dallas thought we're gonna see an abusive parent somewhere.
Well, you know, what they need to do in looking at a child's behavior, a young adult's behavior, is it is a way of communicating. Now, it may not be the appropriate way to communicate, but if you look at that behavior, you look at what they're saying, what they're doing, listen to what they're saying, they are communicating. When they're saying, I'm going to commit suicide or attempting suicide, they're saying, hey, I'm catching hell and I just can't handle it. Somebody needs to listen, you know?
Absolutely. You know, when I was doing all my craziness and making jokes to classes, you can almost say subliminal saying, help me. You know what I'm saying? I can't take this anymore. And that's what was really, in between the lines, That's what I was saying.
Indeed. Well, Steve, I tell you, it has really been very beneficial talking with you. Would you share in this last minute again your books and where we can get them?
Absolutely. All four novels, Runaway, The World is Wrong, Child's Island, and Who Am I? All of them contain the Teenage and Young Adult Survival Handbook. You could go on Amazon if you want, or easiest way and best way is PowerPublishingCorp.com. That's, again, www.PowerPublishingCorp.com.
Okay. Well, it has been real. I appreciate your time, you sharing your experiences and your expertise. To my listening audience, tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. This edition of 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollifield. Technical assistance, Ken Smith. Audio copies are available, and if you want to participate in 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. If you would like to subscribe to 411 Teen podcast, log in wfsu.org. Check us out on Facebook.